All right, welcome to episode 5 of the Big Detox Podcast. My name's Mike, former fully functioning alcoholic, former non-truth teller, truth teller now, and living proof step one can change everything. But you got to get painfully honest. First, I'd like to thank my cousin, who had sent me a fancy new microphone that we're using today. It showed up unsolicited on Friday. He had sent me a message saying, you know, there were some problems with the audio. And sure enough, I get a new microphone set up. So thank you very much, Michael. That was unbelievably generous. And I can't thank you enough. So in this episode, it's episode 5, we're going to talk about step one, powerless, not hopeless. I am not a firm believer in any one way to get sober. There are people who swear by 12-step process, 12-step, for those who don't know, that's something like AA. There's other things. There's smart recovery. There's Dharma. There's therapy. There's pharmaceutical therapy. I mean, you can get naltrexone, do it on your own. You can just stop cold turkey. It doesn't really matter other than what works well for you. And the one thing that I've learned through all this is if you take a 24-hour period, whatever you're doing is working just as much as somebody else who made 24 hours without using drugs or alcohol. So everybody's got their own journey. Even people within AA do things differently. They work what they call their own program. So we're going to talk about that. But step one is kind of misconstrued in the world as well, because we say in the normal world, well, step one is admitting that there's a problem. Correct. However, just by saying I have a problem when I drink doesn't mean I'm going to stop drinking. You're going to avoid it. You're not going to do it. So when it comes down to step one of Alcoholics Anonymous, it literally reads, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives became unmanageable. That second part is the important part. Your life had become unmanageable for whatever reason. And my experience of years of alcohol abuse and the slow decline, making poor decisions, theft, all that sort of thing, that wasn't what made me quit. Strokes, kidney failure, didn't make me quit. That's not when I had my moment, and we'll talk more about that. But one of the things to point out, especially in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's we. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol and that our lives have become unmanageable. And one of the things that AA is great for is the social accepting. That, right, they call them meetings, where you go, and there are different types of meetings. It could be a speaker meeting. It could be a big book reading where they read something out of the big book. It could be a discussion meeting. It could be a meeting where you read today's daily reflection. And the daily reflection usually is a snippet of whatever month you're on, 12 months, 12 steps, and it's just a reminder, right, of things. And that usually sparks conversation. And you have a conversation about how alcohol affected your life, your reasoning, that sort of thing. And now how things are different. But again, it's we. It's this group of people. And you'd be amazed. I go to an AA group. I'm not saying AA is the only option. It is one of the tools in my arsenal. that I use. Am I the most perfect 12-step person on the planet? Not even close. Not even remotely close. But it's one of those things, if you're going to attack Russia and you're the Ukraine, you can't just do it with a drone. You need boots on the ground. You need an air force. You need intelligence. You need all these different things. And that's the way that I look at my addiction, is that for me to properly move forward and to heal and to make myself better, it's a process and it's a fight. And I want to have as many options that I can, because one might work one day and one may not. So again, it's, we admitted we are powerless over alcohol, that our lives have become unmanageable. And this sounds very, very simple, but it's not. It's really, really difficult to say. It's humbling. And it can be the most spiritual and psychological pivot point you ever make in your life, because your life had, your existence was your addiction. It was your identity to a lot of people. You know, how many times did we talk about recovered drug addicts who, we talked about the stigma. And the stigma says, once a drug addict, always a drug addict. Is that true? No, absolutely not. People can recover. People can heal. You'd be amazed how many people have given up alcohol because their lives were unmanageable and gone on to do great things. Look at all the people, Sir Anthony Hopkins, the actor, Bradley Cooper, all these people who have gone on to do great things. Also, people in the business world, professionals, lawyers. We've had alcoholic, recovered alcoholic senators, congressmen, all kinds of people who have really put a mark on society, and they're recovered. So you're only as good as your next day. So today we're going to dig into what step one actually means, what science says about surrender by admitting you have a problem, your life is unmanageable, why people are so resistant to it. Because once you admit it and you really believe it internally, you better do something about it or it will kill you. We'll talk about my own step one moment, and importantly, what recovery looks like for people who have never set foot in an AA meeting, because that works too. But the simplicity of step one, and I have a problem with alcohol, pretty much amount to the same thing. And that step always has to happen in recovery. And that has to happen from the person doing it for themselves. Because no one else can make you quit alcohol. They can encourage you. They can tell you. They can threaten you. They can do all these sorts of things. But until you decide you are done and your life is a complete mess because of it, you're going to really, really have a hard time going forward. So let's start at the beginning. We admitted. Not we got caught. We got forced into rehab. We woke up in the hospital with in detox with the hospital break. And no, that's not what that is. It's we admitted. And we admitted to ourselves. And we looked forward to begin the process of recovery. You have to admit it. And that's the hardest thing. Even if you know you have a drinking problem, admitting you have a problem, getting help, step, you know, doing the next thing is what's important. According to a survey in 2023, the National Survey of Drug Use and Health, 94% of people with substance use disorder, and I'm using substance use disorder, that means alcoholic, drug addict, that sort of thing, don't receive treatment. And the number one reason for it is they think, I don't need it. If you think you don't need it, and either people are telling you you need it, or you are questioning it yourself, that you might have a problem. It's something to take a look at internally. Denial is loud internally internally, they say, I don't have a problem. It's clever. It'll convince you you don't have a problem. And if you were like me, you told yourself things like, I'm not drinking that much. If I really wanted to, I could stop. I don't need help. And the worst freaking one about all of them is I'm not like those people. When you absolutely are that person. But you can only admit that you are that person when you have surrendered and said enough's enough. I identify with what I am. So let's talk about neuroscience and a little bit about a trash can in all this. No one likes the word powerless. And in fact, if you look at these online fellas who, you know, preach power and recovery, you're not powerless, you don't need AA, you don't need any of those things, you see that they might have a point. And it might sound really, really good to you. I'm not powerless, I'm strong, you know, strong man, strong woman, that sort of thing. It makes you sound weak, helpless, like, you know, you're begging for mercy. But powerlessness is not about weakness. What it's about is truth. And they say the truth will set you free. And indeed, that is the case. 29.5 million Americans over the age of 12 meet the criteria of alcohol use disorder in 2022. And more than 60% of them tried to quit at least once during that year. But of those folks, only 25% stayed sober longer than a year without any structured help. And here's why. Alcohol basically hijacks you. It hijacks your brain. It weakens the prefrontal cortex of your brain. That's part that helps you make decisions, judgments. And it also affects your panic button, and it puts these things into overdrive. And these make unstimulated people very level-headed, very calculative. This creates chaos to your brain when you do this with drugs and alcohol. So when you decide to drink again and swearing you wouldn't, guess what? That wasn't logic. That was a wiring in your brain doing that for you. So it's kind of like, you know, you get up in the morning, you pour it out in the morning, all your booze, you're going to quit, dumping it all down, 2 o'clock, guess where you are? You're either at the gas station or the liquor store buying another bottle. You make rules. Some of the best ones are talked about, in the big book. Only on weekends, I'm only going to drink. Only beer and wine, no hard alcohol. Those sorts of things. You end up breaking those rules. You swear on your kids' lives. You swear to people that you love that you'll never drink again. And sure shit, you do. There were times where I threw alcohol up. Threw it in the trash. And if you know anything about my family, we are not really good with the trash. Not everything's bad. Kids put the garbage in there. It's not always locked up. There's dog shit. All that kind of stuff. And you put that in there, and I go diving in there like I threw away a limited edition bottle of Blanton's, and it was cheap vodka. Powerless? I would think so. Gross? Oh, absolutely. And honest? Yeah. That was me being honest with myself, because I could not stop. I could not. I did not want to, and I wanted another day. I wanted another opportunity to feel just good enough to get by the day. It was killing me, but that's what I wanted. Our lives become unmanageable. It's not just DUIs. It's not just divorces. People hear this and they think, "Wow, that guy's got a problem. You know, he got OWI." Well, people that don't have substance abuse disorders get OWIs. They make a poor choice. You know, they have one drink too many. They may not be a full-blown alcoholic, but they've made an unimaginable to society decision, and they got caught for it. divorce, sleeping under a bridge, stealing, people that put their bodies out for sex to get money to use drugs and alcohol. That is definitely a group of people that exists. And those are the ones that most commonly we think of when we think of people that have lost complete control over their minds and bodies due to the allergy that is alcohol. But 40% of people with alcohol use disorder work full-time jobs. I work a full-time job. And actually, I got an exciting announcement coming up at the end of this podcast of what I'm going to do kind of going forward. But they work full-time jobs. They show up, but they're complete and utter mess inside. Usually the last thing to go is a job because it gives you purpose. Oh, I still got a job. You know, I've had conversations with people that work 50 years and people change shifts. I mean, I knew a gentleman, he's like, yeah, I changed shifts because there was less people working on second shift. And that way it was easier for me to get away with my alcoholism. That's some strategic ass shit. When you change your life, your family lives, just to avoid people at work because you're hanging on to that job, right? You're showing up, you're falling apart inside. It's unmanageable. Starts to creep in there when you're hiding bottles. I did it all over. Bottles, beer bottles. Why? Who knows? You hate yourself. You make people promises to quit and you break them within sometimes days, sometimes hours, sometimes minutes. You're physically alive, but you're dead inside. I wasn't living the last couple years. I certainly wasn't dying, but I wasn't living. I was on my way to dying. And if some of those things are happening, they're hitting a little close to home, that's good. Maybe you're tapping yourself on the shoulder thinking, maybe it's time. You know, for me, it happened. It was a slow burn. Lost everything. Medical. And we've talked about this. Happened after Super Bowl Sunday this year. You know, when yet again, my stash of vodka was found by my kid, Graham. And that was it. I was going in the next day and to get help, detox, the whole thing. Why do we fight that? I mean, we fight it like you're getting mugged. You're fighting for your life not to get help. And from the outside looking in, it looks like you're an idiot. And you are. You're completely out of your mind. Your mind has become unmanageable. Your body's become unmanageable. Your existence has become unmanageable. And you say to yourself, I'm not that bad. Half of all people, again, with alcohol use disorder are quote-unquote high function. You don't need to lose everything to be lost. I guarantee you that. People say I can quit whenever I want. 70% of relapse happen within a year without any sort of structured recovery. And that could be a lot of things. Could be AA and some of the other things we talked about. Quitting alone is like doing, it's kind of like doing open heart surgery a little bit with a freaking spoon. It doesn't work. You can't fix yourself that way. You need the right tools. You need the safety. Detox can kill people as well. And then he said, you know what? I'm not powerless. If you're not powerless, why can't you quit drinking? It makes sense, but people don't do it. Be honest. It has nothing to do with weakness. You're just up against something that outsmarts you, owns you, controls you, and 99.9% of the time is going to beat you. So what does the academic world say about those who quote-unquote do step one? They surrender. I have a problem with alcohol. My life has become unmanageable. I'm committed to getting help. I think it was 2020 study. I know it was an addiction research and theory. Found that People who fully embrace step one or the version of step one had significantly higher long-term sobriety rates. Because when you stop pretending you're okay and you finally get the help you need to be okay, surrender isn't defeat. It's an acceptance with an action. And that action is to get help. That action is to do the next step, the work. You know, for me, the surrender was easier than the hard work to get sober. Because detox hurt. Those first couple months in rehab hurt. The emotional roller coaster of that is awfully difficult. I can tell you this. So again, it's acceptance. In my mind, it's acceptance with action. People are going to say, well, it's surrender, you're weak, you're all these sorts of things. Well, whatever version of poetic lyrics you want to put on it, it all amounts to the same thing. You have to quit for yourself. You have to find the reason to quit. You got to commit to it, and you need to take action on it. And that action could be anything from just not picking up another bottle to 12-stepping 90 meetings in 90 days. It could be a wide variety of different things. It could be years in sober living. But if that is working, that is a success story. So what if you don't go to AA? You know, this is no judgment either way, if you do or you don't. No judgment here. It doesn't make a difference to me. But something that needs to be said, especially when people are sitting there with their arm crossed, you don't have to go to AA to recover. 22 million Americans have successfully resolved a substance abuse issue in the United States currently. 22 million have done it. Less than 30% did it through a 12-step group. They're not going to put that on the doors of sorority clubs. But that's fact. And other things work. But what doesn't work is not saying your life's unmanageable. Not saying that you have a problem with getting work. Half the people in recovery use therapy, faith groups, or peer models that are actually outside of AA. People go to IOP, right? Partial hospitalization programs. They go to peer support meetings. They go to therapy. They go to all kinds of stuff. They listen to books on addiction. They listen to books on mental health, right? Let's not forget that mental health is a real, real big contributor to addiction issues within the United States. You know, even Harvard's research says, you know, AA is effective, but people who recover with non-AA methods can do it and maintain long-term sobriety if they have accountability, support, structure, a plan. Those are all things that AA offers, but you can build yourself is the point of the story. So if AA isn't for you, that's great. But recovery still requires certain things, in my experience. Radical honesty, some form of surrender or a hot moment saying this is out of control. And it requires a connection. And that connection has to be to something. It could be a therapist. It could be smart recovery meeting. It could be you stop drinking and everything starts to become really, really good at home. You're doing that, rebuilding your life at home for your sobriety on a daily basis. But you're still doing the work, and you're not doing it alone. The I have a problem. Step one, we are powerless over alcohol and our lives have become unmanageable. You have to practice that on a daily basis. you have to not want to return to what that was or who that was. AA does a member survey, and their long-term member survey, which is folks 10 years of sobriety, cite step one as the step that they revisit the most. Because you almost got to do it every day. You almost have a daily reminder of this was a complete shit show. And this is what I need to do. There are other steps, but that admitting that you have a problem is the thing that people go back to in AA almost on a daily basis. Because the second that you get complacent and you think, I've got this, addiction will start whispering again. That's whispered to me. I have outside motivations that aren't AA, not to drink. Health being number one. The step one is not about perfection. They always say, what is it? It's progress, not perfection. It's really about, in my mind, it's about posture. It's about posturing. Say, yep, got a problem. I'm doing something about it. And I know that I can't do it alone. I can't do it without support. And that's enough. And if you're still not sure about any of the stuff that I've been talking about for the past half an hour, ask yourself what happens when you try to stop. Do things like, I may make it a few days, then I binge. I lie. I feel like I'm going crazy. I start shaking. Then maybe you're ready to do that. To admit you have a problem. That AA's words, not mine. That you are powerless and your life has become unmanageable. And it's not to shame yourself at all. But you have to have this engine going every single day. Telling you of that version of yourself in your rear view mirror. Because that rear view mirror will be in your back seat. And then will be in your front seat. And then you will be with that version of yourself. If you don't remind yourself of what you were and what you're trying to become, what version of yourself you're trying to become. And it's finally stop fighting alone. People don't need to be active in addiction. They don't need to have gone through addiction to support you. Family. You know, you can be supported by jokes. You know, their jokes fly around my house all the time about, you know, I was drunk there, you know. That's part of a reminder for me on a daily basis. That's who I was. Step one is where the shame starts to lose its hold on you. Its grip. And when that becomes unmanageable, that's when you start making progress. And it's not because you're fixed. You can't just say, my life's unmanageable. There's work that goes through it. But you finally stop pretending that we were broken. That you were broken, that I was broken, we were broken. If you say it out loud, I'm powerless over alcohol, my life has become unmanageable. Remember, it's not a weakness, it's a beginning. And whether you're in AA, therapy, smart, rehab, or just trying to survive another freaking day sober, you belong here. You know, I get great messages from people who have listened. Keep those things coming in, ideas. And so with this one, we're going to, you know, we're closing it out with the powerlessness and hopelessness. That's that big push you got to make to get yourself in the door or wherever it is that you're going to seek treatment. And that may not be in rehab. It's going to be different than my story. But to be honest with yourself, it will keep you alive. Want to talk about another thing that I'm working on. One of the things that I've been struggling with is what am I going to do with my life? And how can I help, given my experience, given what I went through, and I am going to start a consulting company. It's called Heads Up Consulting, where we are going to work with people in recovery by helping them with not job coaching, career reentry. We're going to help people in rehab facilities, sober living, dealing with their current employers, what to say, do they need help with their forms, those sorts of things. We are also going to be working with HR groups. Every company, you wouldn't believe the amount of companies that are like, oh yeah, we want to be a second chance company. We want to this, that, and the other. They don't know how to do it because they don't have experience of either going through addiction recovery or dealing with that. And so we're going to be working with HR teams on helping with the stigma, doing policy reviews, those sorts of things. And to try to mirror those two things, right? We got HR and we got recovery. And how do we get people back on the right path, going in the right direction? How do we help people find jobs? How do we help companies bust down the door of stigma? You know, companies are foolish to say we're second chance companies. People who are recovering, they don't want a second chance from you. They want a chance. A second chance, you know? Somebody said this the other day in a meeting I was in. Not AA, but another meeting I was in is we were talking about jobs and work, and you know, I kind of posed, what do they say? I said, what to tell an employer if they say, should I take a second chance on you? And someone said, I don't want a second chance. I want a chance. And employers think so much that this is like some kind of charity program, and it's not. These are people's lives. And you're looking at some of the most motivated and highly disciplined people on the planet are people that have beaten alcohol and drug addiction. Now, yeah, we may have created a wake a mess behind us, but that's not going to define us the rest of our lives. You know, there's a version of me that I'll never get back, you know. The one who hadn't broken anything, who still believed he was something, that person's gone, long gone. And I don't know exactly when I lost it. Some days it hurts really bad to try to get back what you thought you had. And if I hadn't ruined it, what that would have looked like. But then there's this other version of me, and I'm in the process of creating him, and I haven't met him. And he's happy, he's proud, not exactly whole, no one's ever going to be, right? But I'm trying. You know, I'm here walking through the aftermath, trying to carry through the weight of everything that I did, and maybe that person is the one covered in scars, and a mess, and dragging myself around anyway, is the one who really deserves a chance in all this, and not because I'm healed, but because, you know, I'm not going to stop trying to be better, even after everything. Next episode here. We are definitely going to be continuing the conversation in regards to AA a little bit more on the science of 12-step programs, how they work. And I wish everybody a fantastic day, and we will talk soon. Please feel free to share any of these episodes. Get people involved, and feel free to send me any messages that you might have. Have a good day.